Pardon the interruption, but I'm Pablo Torre. We have been working together a lot lately, Tony. I just want you to know how much that means to me.
I'm Tony Kornheiser. That's really nice to hear, kid. And I said kid because I'm actually not remembering your name. What is it again?
Yeah.
Your name?
Yeah, it's Pablo Torre. I said it literally 4 seconds ago, now 5 seconds ago, as we keep the accounting going. And it's not that hard, I would say, after the years we've spent together.
I'm old, and I have bad short-term recollection.
Come on, you have a legal pad full of memories, and you can't put my name as one of them. Thank you, appreciate it.
Memories, like
very neat handwriting
or something like that. Welcome to PTI, boys and girls. Wilbon has to be running out of vacation days at some point, but for now, I am joined once again by our great friend, the host of the ESPN Daily Podcast, Mr. Pablo Torre. Good. Here we go, kid. And we begin with Bill Belichick saying that Cam Newton's vaccination status had no bearing on Newton being cut by the Patriots. Urban Meyer said the vaccination status of his players has bearing on his decisions in Jacksonville. And as a result, the NFLPA is looking into this because teams are prohibited from cutting a player solely because of vaccination status. Pablo, do you believe vaccination status had nothing to do with Newton being released?
Tony, the word nothing there leads me to say no quite definitively to the question. And I know that Bill Belichick never wants to tell people like us anything about anything. But in this case, he also knows because of Urban Meyer that he can't say anything about this in particular. But the reality of the cost-benefit analysis, Tony, that I believe a smart person like Bill Belichick is running would lead him to consider it as a factor. And I say that because the NFL is this interesting experiment right now. They have all these people vaccinated. And so, statistically, 7 times an unvaccinated person is more likely to test positive than a vaccinated person among NFL personnel. So if you need a backup quarterback and he's 7 times more likely to get the virus or test positive for it, that tells me, yeah, that probably puts a little bit of weight on that side of the scale.
I'm going to let you handle that part of the question. I'm going to go to the larger thing here, which is that vaccines matter. They absolutely matter.
Yes.
If you are not vaccinated and you have a certain circumstance of contact tracing, you have to stay out away from the team longer than someone who is vaccinated. You are lost to the team for a longer period of time. Plus, you are 7 times more likely to catch the virus, and then you're out an even longer period of time. This is the number one issue in America's workplaces and schools right now, fighting this virus, fighting it with vaccines at the moment. Look at Mike Zimmer. Look what his face looks like when he talks about Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins, who has publicly said, I've heard this, I'll do anything to help the team. Well, no, you won't. This is supposedly football, the ultimate team sport, and you're not necessarily being a team player. So can you get the virus when you're vaccinated? Yes, we know that. Are you more likely to get it when you're not? Yes, we know that.
Tony, you quoting Kirk Cousins makes me want to quote one of your friends, I believe, one of your former classmates, Jim Steinman, right? He wrote the great line, I would do anything for love, but I won't do that. How much do you love football? That's the question here, right? We could frame it in terms of jabs and syringes and pandemics, but the other way to frame it is, how much do you want to play this game? Because seemingly these guys will do everything else but this when it comes to quarterbacks in this league, like Kirk Cousins and Lamar Jackson and Cam Newton, and I don't get it.
There's a related story today that MLB Network will not let Al Leiter and John Smoltz into their studios from now on because they are not vaccinated. I wonder about this. Employers all over the country are saying, do you want to work inside? Because if you want to work inside with the rest of us, you're going to have to get vaccinated. And I am wondering, I don't know this, if John Smoltz and Joe Buck will work side by side when they do games for Fox. I don't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. But Tony, we stay with baseball here because things on the field, at least, are suddenly thumbs up for the New York Mets. Javi Baez and Francisco Lindor apologized yesterday for giving fans a thumbs down. And then the team went out and swept a doubleheader from the Marlins, a result that was keyed by Baez scoring all the way from first on a base hit and a bobble. So Tony, do you think Baez can win over Mets fans with an amazing play like that?
One play? No, it doesn't work that way. Not if you hit 190 for the rest of the season and the Mets lose and they finish way up the track. No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
That's not how it works. And not if you are playing badly and you get booed again and you give everybody the double thumbs down. It doesn't work that way. Now, if the Mets win and Baez plays great, then he's fine. I thought what happened the other day was very significant, that Baez and Francisco Lindor went out there and they apologized. And Baez said, I'm not down on the fans. I love the fans. And Lindor, I believe, said, I've played lousy. I sort of understand what's going on. What actually happened, I'm sure, is that Sandy Alderson went to them and said, would you guys like to continue drawing a paycheck and playing baseball? And isn't it amazing what that can get someone to
what
say?
What a deal. Yes, Tony, this is a story that is about a moment in time. It is a moment in time that's already drained down the hourglass because, of course, everything involving New York City and booing and baseball fandom is about what have you done for me lately. And lately, on the field, the Mets have been encouraging because of that play we showed. Off the field, though, let's just keep in mind how this works for the New York Mets. Of course, the next headline we get is that Zach Scott, their acting general manager, replacing the previous general manager, of course, Jared Porter, who got deposed because ESPN had reported that he had sent 60-some-odd text messages and explicit photos to a female reporter. Well, the guy who is replacing him has now been arrested for DUI coming out of a party with some distance between the exit of the party and the arrest. A party thrown by Steve Cohen, the owner of the Mets, who hired both of those guys. So no slow days, Tony, in your old hometown.
Yeah, I'm not gonna connect the dots too strenuously here because I don't know anything more than what you just said. But I will go back to the issue of what fans do and what they should be able to do, and I'm gonna drop a name on you. I had Tom Friedman of the New York Times on my podcast today.
Heard of him.
We were talking about golf. We were talking about golf because he was at the tournament at Caves Valley, the BMW, over the weekend. And he said he heard things on that golf course that he had never heard before in a golf setting. The viciousness of the comments directed at certain players. It's his theory that this comes from the viciousness and the anonymity of the internet and it seeps into the culture. Like somebody yelling Brooksy was nothing compared to what was actually being yelled. I will say this, that I have always thought in a stadium sport that fans can boo, that it's okay. It's sort of a compact between teams and between fans. You can boo. I don't think you should say anything that's horrifying, but I do think that you can boo, and I think what players have to do is cash the checks and live with it. So.
Yes, that's what the money is for, Tony. I'll just say this very quickly at the end here. If you quote that poem from Teddy Roosevelt, The Man in the Arena, ask yourself who occupies the arena. Why is the Coliseum a place of great drama? It's because you have people in the stands who are irrational. And trying to convince them to be less irrational is a fool's errand. Just try to make it work with, again, the pile of cash that you're sleeping on.
We move on. Joel Embiid has spoken out on Twitter about Ben Simmons. Contrary to everything we have been led to believe by Joel Embiid himself, he now says he wants Simmons to remain with the Sixers. Embiid said, and I'm quoting here, my tongue is not even in my cheek. I love playing with Ben. Stats don't lie. He's an amazing player. And we all didn't get the job done. It's on me personally. I hope everyone is back because we know we're good enough to win, unquote. Pablo, do you take Embiid at his word that he wants Simmons back?
I want to so badly, Tony. I've been wanting to take him at this specific series of words for 3 months almost. The question I have is, why didn't you say this anytime sooner? Why did you wait for after the official basically leak to come out that says Ben Simmons isn't showing up at all? Go bleep yourselves. He doesn't want to play with you guys. If you wanted to get him out of your life, Joel Embiid, you say nice stuff like this so that other teams make offers that your team might be willing to accept. But all of this is so transparent and so late that it just makes me sad at this point. It's pathetic, Tony.
So I love when people say that stats don't lie because I throw at them another famous quote, which is there's three kinds of lies. Lies, damned lies, and statistics. And people lie as well. And Joel Embiid is lying here. He does not want to play with Ben Simmons, and he said so previously. He does not want to because Ben Simmons can't shoot and is afraid to shoot late in games because he doesn't want to go to the line where he also can't shoot. And so it all falls on Embiid, which Embiid has said. I agree with you. Someone, maybe Daryl Morey, went to Joel Embiid and said, you got to get out there on this.
Yeah, finally.
You can't devalue the guy. You got to say he's really good, and then we can trade him, and you won't have to deal with him anymore. And that's what this is.
What it is, though, is a bunch of lies that are also kind of truths if you just divorce it from the current context, right? Because what he said, Joel Embiid did, he said, it's on me. It's on me as well. We shouldn't all blame Ben Simmons, and we shouldn't. I watched every minute of the Sixers postseason run, Tony. Joel Embiid at the end of that game against the Hawks was bad. Tobias Harris was bad. Doc Rivers was abysmal. Everybody, though, has let Ben Simmons, because of the flaws that you mentioned, so I get it, but they've let him take every arrow, and now he's trying to do cleanup. And look, the reality is Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons together, they are still really good. Number one seed in the Eastern Conference good. The problem is that they clearly don't think they can be their best selves together.
Let me get to some stats that won't lie. The two of them on the court together, the Sixers win 67.5% of the time. One of them off the court, the Sixers win 49% of the time. On the floor together last season, plus 15.5 points. With only Embiid, plus 1.9. With only Simmons, minus 3.8. So it works better when they're out there. Let's take a break. But coming up, the Giants and the Dodgers get all the attention. But are we sleeping on the Brewers?
And Padres starter Blake Snell had a no-hitter through seven. Could he have been allowed to finish it?
Joel Embiid makes me happy because he's yappy. I just made a quick little poem.
Yeah, like he is. Yeah, it's very, very Steinminian of you, Tony. A lyric throwing us into break. Thank you.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code PTI. That's code PTI. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Time to find out what Mr. Big Word has in store for us today. Let's get the first one from the producer over the loudspeaker.
The Brewers are blank contenders in the National League.
They are default contenders. Nobody even knows the Brewers exist. The entire attention in the National League all season has been on the Giants, the Dodgers, and the Padres. This has allowed the Brewers to be coasting to the playoffs right now. They're 10 games up on Cincinnati. They have no fear of ending up in the wild card, and they cannot face either the Giants or the Dodgers in the first round. They walk into this thing. I think their three best pitchers have an ERA of under 250. Their three best starters. Mm-hmm. The back end of their bullpen in August had a 0.25 ERA, and let me get the numbers here, 55 strikeouts and 36 and two-thirds innings. Meanwhile, you're going to have an exhausted team between the Giants and the Dodgers because they're playing critical games all the way up to the end. An exhausted team between the Braves and the Phillies because they're playing critical teams all the way up until the end. So to me, that leaves the Brewers in the default position of favorites in the National League.
To me, Tony, the Brewers are a Wilbonian contender, and I will explain here, I know, because that might be confusing. They're Wilbonian because I'm going to drop a name on you here. The GM of the Brewers is my friend, in fact, my close personal friend, David Stearns, my classmate, my former fellow sports writer at the college newspaper. He is running this team, and he's doing a very Wilbonian thing on top of the name drop that I just insinuated here. He is making everybody take 5 days off on that pitching staff between appearances. A Wilbonian strategy. Don't show up for 5 days after you show up and then come back and be better rested than ever and coast into the postseason. Their pitching staff is so good because they're doing that rest strategy in particular. Wilbonian.
So great what you did. It looked like you were praising Wilbon, but instead you were just carving him up. What is next?
That's right.
It was blank of Padres manager Jace Tingler to pull Blake Snell after 7 innings of no-hit pitching.
It was nostalgic because it reminded us of last year in the World Series in Game 6 when Kevin Cash went out there for Tampa and yanked Snell right out of the game when I believe he was pitching a shutout at that time. And you could see the steam rising off of the guy's head. He was so angry. And you'll notice he's not in Tampa Bay anymore. And I don't know that Cy Young winners are dealt around so casually as happened with Blake Snell. Now, why did the Padres do this last night? We have to go to some numbers here, because in his last start, Snell threw 122 pitches through 7, which was a career high. In this one, he had 7 innings, 107 pitches. And Pablo, if you let him go for the no-hitter, it could be 130 pitches, it could be 140 pitches. They need him for the rest of the regular season to stay in first place. They need him, to get into the playoffs. I had him confused of being in Tampa Bay again. To have that. But I will say that while I understood it, it made me laugh a little bit that they went and they yanked him.
Yeah, it keeps happening to this guy. But my word for this move, this decision, is deflationary, Tony. It's deflationary, not deflating, even though if you're Snell, as you say, he should have been deflated by the result of it. It's deflationary because there have been, I don't know, a zillion no-hitters this year. I believe the actual number is 7 thrown by individuals and 8 if you get a team in there. What this guy is doing here, what this team is doing is saying, we're going to deflate the market for no-hitters. There are too many of them. Not that important. Don't need it.
That's it. Smaller words than usual from Pablo. No triple hyphens. Yeah. Let's take one last break, but still to come, the Packers and Saints opener gets a new home.
And Shohei Ohtani's 22nd stolen base, Tony, is a pretty memorable one.
I loved Snell so much at Tampa Bay when they yanked him off the mound that I thought he was still there, even though I had just said, and you'll notice he's not even there. This is what happens when you get old. It's what happens.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Happy time, people. Happy 22nd birthday, Cam Reddish. Reddish was part of that extraordinary freshman class at Duke a few years back with Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett. Zion went #1 overall to New Orleans. He's a full-fledged NBA star, but he has yet to get the Pelicans to the playoffs. Barrett went #3 overall to the Knicks and had a good year for an improved team, averaging 18 points, 6 rebounds, and 3 assists. Reddish went 10th overall to Atlanta, another very improved team, but Reddish hasn't had any particular success there. He splits time at small forward with Kevin Huerter. Reddish averaged 11 points a game this past season, but shot a miserable 26.2% from 3. If you're looking for something to hang a dream on, in Atlanta's final playoff game against the Bucks, Reddish had 21 points on 6-for-7 from 3. So happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday to Cam Reddish, Tony. But his biggest problem, honestly, is the fact that Kevin Huerter apparently is a guy who can drop 27 on the skulls of Sixers fans everywhere in a Game 7 to win that series. That dude was taken 19th overall in 2018, I believe. He is way better than anybody thought, and he's standing in his way.
Local for me, he went to Maryland.
That's right.
Happy anniversary, Appalachian State. On this day, 14 years ago, 1AA Appalachian State from Boone, North Carolina, became the first 1AA team to ever beat a ranked D1 team when they went into the Big House and beat number 5 Michigan 34-32. Lloyd Carr was coaching Michigan then, and that was his last year. Since then, the Wolverines have gone through Rich Rodriguez, who was 15-22, Brady Hoke, who was 31-20, and now Jim Harbaugh, who is 49-22. But in all these ensuing years, the Wolverines have never posed a serious threat in the national championship picture. They've been completely overshadowed by arch rival Ohio State, not to mention Wisconsin, Penn State, Michigan State, even Northwestern. Appalachian State, Michigan is to college football what Chaminade, Virginia is to college basketball.
I have great fondness for Appalachian State, Tony. My first assignment for Sports Illustrated in print was to cover the 1AA championship game. That same year, I watched Appalachian State against Delaware, which means that I saw Joe Flacco in college and also was offered and accepted my first glass of, you know, what's it called? Moonshine in a parking lot before the game, which is why I don't remember much else from that game.
You probably shouldn't say that on national television, but it's ESPN too, so don't worry. Happy trails to a sinker from Kendall Graveman. You'll remember at the trade deadline, the Seattle GM, Jerry DePoto, traded the Mariners' best reliever, Kendall Graveman, to the Astros in division. Among the things he got back was third baseman Abraham Toro. The Seattle pitching staff was incensed about the deal, feeling it sabotaged the team. Graveman himself cried. Well, since then, Graveman had given up just 8 hits and 2 earned runs in 10 2/3 innings for Houston. And Toro had hit .303 with 3 home runs and 12 RBI for Seattle. As fate would have it, they faced off last night in the 8th inning of a scoreless game with the bases loaded. Graveman threw a 98.6 mile per hour sinker and Toro crushed it, 413 feet to the deepest part of right center. Boom, grand slam. Now it's a Hollywood ending if Graveman strikes him out because it's a dream matchup, but a grand slam is by far the bigger kahuna.
And shout out to the biggest kahuna, Jerry DePoto, the GM who I crushed for this trade. He just got an extension, rightfully so.
Let's go quickly to the big finish. The Packers-Saints opener being moved to Jacksonville. Okay by you?
Of course, Hurricane Ida has been an absolute, absolute nightmare. I hope everything gets better soon. The Phillies have won 5 straight. Are you impressed?
A lot of them are against the Nats. Wander Suero, what are you doing? Shohei Ohtani stole home in a win over the Yankees. You must be happy about that.
I am. He is 6th in the majors with 22 steals, Tony. College football tonight, UAB and Jacksonville State. You intrigued?
I don't want to lie. I'm not intrigued. I think I'm going to try and watch the tennis to count how many times Tsitsipas goes to the bathroom and what an effect that has on whoever he is playing. Speaking of tennis, last one, U.S. Open tonight, Sloane Stephens and Coco Gauff. Who you got?
As the kid, Tony, who feels older every day, give me Sloane Stephens against Coco Gauff. I'll take the relatively older young person because I identify with them more than ever.
We're out of time, and we will try to do better the next time. I'm Tony Kornhuser.
And I'm Pablo Torre. Thank you so much for watching. Please check out ESPN Daily on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get really good podcasts.
All right, Jackie McMullen, last day I believe was yesterday. A toast to you. Cheers.